Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Well, I tell you, Boniface, I expected you to give us a nasheed there. But anyway, I think he's got our good friend there, Adam Kamra. Adam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how you doing this fine? I can tell you, beautiful rainy morning. Will you describe this as a beautiful or, inclement weather? I don't know what your description will be, but how are you doing this morning, Adam?
I love the weather, whether it's sunny or rainy. But I am missing the sunrise this morning. All my friends eagerly look forward to amazing sunrise pictures with the birds in the scene. Although it's overcast, Shafat, and I could see the clouds melting into the ocean out at sea, the clouds have moved closer to land. The rain has come to land. It's now raining continuously on the Durban beachfront. But I still managed to get my bird photos, Shafat. They braved the weather and did a circular flight around just above my apartment and managed to get some lovely photos to start the day, Shafat.
Now, I wonder what type of... Generally, you catch the dove or the pigeon, I think, one of them that comes up. I think it's more the pigeons that you get, flying over. But generally, this type of weather, I think the albatross, it doesn't affect the albatross. Any weather he's around, you'll find albatross all over, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, the seabirds are well adapted to wet weather because they often spend many days and even weeks out at sea. So birds like the albatross, the squaw, seagulls, terns, cormorants, they all are quite at home with water below them and water above them, Shafat. But our pigeons that usually roost in the buildings along the Durban beachfront, they are fair weather birds. They wouldn't want their wings to get soaking wet, Shafat. But they do venture out if it's a light drizzle or light rain. Or there's patches of rain with gaps in between. They do venture out to get some food. So I was fortunate enough, even though it was raining, to see a few birds in flight this morning, Shafar.
Alhamdulillah, and as you said, you look forward to that and any condition, but you still embrace each morning. And, especially if it's a rainy morning, that freshness of that rain falling and the greenery, I mean, it's extra special, Adam. Like, when you're adding a masala and you said, hey, extra special biryani spice. But this morning with the rain falling and you imbibing the fresh air, how great is that, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, I'm pretty much enjoying the coolness of the atmosphere because I don't know if you noticed in the recent days, starting to get the summer weather to push in and it's becoming quite humid. The nights are quite hot. You gotta have the ceiling fan on, or if you like an aircon, have the aircon on. So it's coming to that time of the year where you won't be able to sleep without the aircon. It needs to be so hot. So it's refreshing to get a little bit of cool weather in between. And I think it was a day or two ago, I saw pictures of Sutherland covered in the white stuff. And a lot of people thought it was snow, but it was actually hail, Shafar.
I imagine, the weather patterns are all going different. And when you look at the harsh conditions that we've been experiencing over the last few days or so, if you look at this, Adam, how do you advise those that come to you and it's going to rain, in the weekend? So they say, I'm going fishing this weekend. In the back of your mind, it's raining. How do you advise your customers or your friends that are new to fishing?
Yes, Shafad, you get all types of fishermen, some that wait for the absolute best conditions and weather. They follow the tide, they follow the moons, and they watch the wind, they watch the rain. And then you get the others who perhaps are working hard 6 days a week. They just have the one day off. So come rain or shine, they are still going fishing. And even if they spend a few hours at the beach and don't get a bite because the conditions were not ideal, but they still love that outing of being on, with the sand between your toes and having a line cast into the ocean and waiting for the unknown. But the biggest question I get, Shafar, is from beginner anglers who booked with a charter boat, and they want to know what is the weather going to be like for this weekend and whether they should go or they should cancel. The best advice, Shafar, is to follow the guidance of the charter skipper. So he knows his vessel. He is more adept at reading the weather according to the forecasts. And he would know, for example, if the winds are stronger than 15 knots or 20 knots or whatever his limit is, then he will tell all his crew, conditions are not favorable and the trip is cancelled. But it's quite distressing and annoying for them when someone who doesn't have full knowledge looks at the forecast and he says it shows 10 knots northeasterly, and he advises the beginner angler, no, it's going to be very choppy out there, you better cancel. So it's difficult for these charter boats to fill their boat, you know, with crew. And when they do have a full crew, sometimes the wrong advice goes around and people start canceling safari.
You know, I was walking down the South Coast. I mean, you know, Swingo Beach. I walked a river mouth right to Runian Rocks, and I was watching quite a few people fishing. And it so happened that I walked up to a gentleman, and whilst he was there, I saw him, you know, jerk. And next moment, I said, this guy's got a shad on. And I walked right up to him. I said, yes, nice big shad. He said, you know what? You're the lucky man. And I laughed at him. I said, yeah, I came in at the right time. And I saw that the sizes are quite huge, you know, the big shads in the South Coast, Adam. So the sizes are getting bigger, and maybe people are following protocols, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, it is the banned season now. So if you had hooked a shad, hope you had released it. We have 2 months of banned season, and most of the anglers are respecting the Shafad, and that's why the numbers are growing. But as you mentioned, you were his luck. You know, we went out fishing on Friday afternoon, Friday afternoon, and fishing was really slow. We were getting a couple of small bites, etc. And when it goes like that, Shafad, you actually wait for your phone to ring or something, because usually when the phone rings, that's when you get a really strong pull, because you've been distracted from the fishing. So everyone who called up, we were just hoping, you know. So fishermen have the old wives' tales and a little bit of superstitions as well. Normally, they don't want to be disturbed while fishing, but when the fishing is really slow, either you wait for a call and then hope you get a pull, or sometimes you say, you know, I take the sandwiches out. If we have a bite, the fish will have a bite as well, Shafad.
Well, okay, and alhamdulillah, a good friend, Vaizi, says, I'll read your three cools and you'll get one pull, okay? And I gave him the ratio. If I read the 6 cools, so I'll get 2 fish. And 9 will be 3, and he started laughing at me. But actually, so the person that I saw pulling out the shad, and he had a big white bucket next to him, was fishing illegally then, Adam?
Not necessarily, Shafaj. Sometimes they fish for live baits to target garrick. There have been quite a lot of garrick around our coast, and you are allowed 2 garrick per person per day. A minimum size 70 centimeters. So he could possibly have been trying for a bait fish like a carantine or a mullet, and he would keep that in the white bucket, you know, keep it alive, and then pin that out and cast it out for garrick. But even while trying for live baits, you inadvertently pick up a shad. And in the banned season, Shafad, if you catch a shad, you're not even allowed to use it as a live bait. So you can't say, no, I'm not taking this home. I'm putting it out to catch a different species. You have to respect that rule. So if you hook a shad, you've got to release it and then try again for another live bait, or try with some cut-up baits for other species of fish, Shafad.
JazakAllah for clearing that with us. And, you know, the ski boat club that you have there, you know, is it manned Monday to Sunday? Have you have someone special, or is certain people allowed to go there in and out, provided that they are members? You know, I'm talking about that ski boat club that you have there in by Rivermouth and Runian Rocks, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, the ski boat club is positioned in a really prized position on the KZN coast. A lot of the anglers that launch from the Durban Harbour actually steam south and come and fish our grounds, and they usually use quite a lot of fuel to get there. If we launch from Spingo Beach, the fishing grounds is right there at our launch site, so we end up using very little fuel, and it's actually pristine grounds to fish in. Ours is a very small club, so we don't have permanent staff manning our tractor. It's all done in teamwork, Shafad. If you come down with your boat, you know, our club members, they know the routine. They'll come down with enough crew to assist driving the tractor, putting the boat into the water, parking the tractor, and then everyone gets on board the boat and off they go, Shafad. So it's pretty much the camaraderie that we look forward to, and helping one another to have a successful day of fishing. And very often, Shafad, the anglers that are not fishing will come down and assist the guys to put the boat in, and then they'll get a call maybe about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and they'll come back and assist them with the tractor, waiting for them, you know, to beach, and even guiding them, because very often we have very high sandbanks forming there, and it's easier to spot it from the shore. So they'll advise the skipper which line to take in when they're coming to beach.
Thinking aloud, yeah, Adam, you know, it's a beautiful place, as you said, it's a very vantage point. Have you seating arrangements there, maybe on a, like a windy day, that I can sit in your club there, or maybe in the veranda, and have a look at the Indian Ocean? Do you have a facilities like that? And, you know, is it members only, or you have to pay a subscription fee that, you know, maybe I'm living right near your door. So maybe as a non-ski boat owner like that, can any people become members without ski boats and so forth?
Yes, Shafad, as with any club, you know, to use the facilities, you have to be a member. So you're very welcome to join. And it's, you don't even have to be a boat owner or even a fisherman to join our club. We have various structures, boat owner, non-boat owner, social member. So even as a social member, you can be a member of the club. You can basically come and use the parking area if you're a rock and surf angler. And then, you know, you also can participate in all our club socials, where we have speakers coming and talking on fishing, and we usually have a sausage braai or a full braai. So it's very easy to access our club, but the facilities are reserved for members only. Having said that, Shafat, the council has also erected some fantastic facilities just out of the river mouth, just above the rocks, where they have a walkway and a stairway going up with a viewing deck. And that gives you an amazing vantage point just to relax and watch the waves rolling in, or even to try and spot some whale activity out at sea, Shafat.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially when you at this part of the world, it's a beautiful part. And if you look at maybe you've got visitors coming from, you know, Johannesburg or other parts of the world, you can really take them and showcase the Indian Ocean here right at the doorsteps of Isipingo Beach. Well, you know, many are saying that fishing was really good in winter, but then they go on saying in the summer, the fish is getting going. But I always thought that the fish was more, you know, prevalent in winter because of the sardine run and this run and the big game fish and so forth. Try and, you know, educate us, Adam.
Yes, Shafad, you know what, everyone has the theories. obviously, when in the wintertime, when the sardine shoals are coming through, there's abundant food in the ocean for the big fish to come through. But a lot of anglers feel, you know, when the sardine shoals are around, it actually pulls the fish away from the shore, and the fish are busy feeding happily in amongst the shoals, you know, deeper out. So fishing actually, it becomes harder to actually catch fish from the shore. And then, as you said, as you rightly said, others believe that, you know, because of the abundance of bait in the water, it brings the fish closer. So it is the experience varies from year to year. But along our Cape Town coast, we are so blessed that we can fish throughout the year. In many spots around the world, and even in South Africa, the winter time becomes too cold to actually fish. So fishing takes a back seat, and the tackle shops really battle through the winter season. But along the coast, we have such temperate conditions that we don't really feel the biting cold of winter. But what we do enjoy, Shafad, is different species that bite prolifically along our coastline. The general rule is that through the winter months, the bottom fishing is better. So the guys going out with ski boats and booking on charter boats can go out and catch abundant rockard, slingers, Englishmen, Scotsmen, all manner of bottom fish, and excellent table fish as well. And then as we move towards the summer months, the fishing generally changes to game fish, where you go out to sea trawling for tuna, and the very prized Dorado. I'm really gunning for some big Dorado this season, Shafad. Last year's summer didn't produce that many Dorado, but this summer we're ready with the tackle, we're ready with the boat, and we're looking forward to those aerobatic displays that these fish often produce. And then also in the lighter tackle facet of artificial lure, fishing with soft baits, especially the Makati soft bait, has proven very popular, very productive in recent summer months, summer seasons. So this season, I'll be trying drop shot fishing in the Durban Harbour, targeting Springer, which is also called Ladyfish, and Kingfish as well, Shepard.
Absolutely, Adam. And I know, you know, talking to you and, you know, when you're on your boat and all, you and your friends in winter, whilst you're fishing, you are enjoying cups of or mugs of coffee and so forth. And, you know, the drinks that you have in winter, obviously, the fishermen will differ to what you have in summer. Perhaps in summer, you go more for these branded, you know, what they call them, the electrolyte drinks, Adam. And how are fishermen program? Fishermen of yesteryear just took their water and they tapped to their flask of tea and maybe that black carbonated drink. What is it, you know, the hydration process that you all go through looking at winter and summer, Adam?
Yes, Shepard. You know, as you know, being out at sea for many hours during the day in the blaring sun, whether it's summer or winter, you do tend to get dehydrated. So it's very important to drink lots of fluids. I'm not a big fan of energy drinks. I don't go for the fancy Red Bulls and Dragon, and even the ones that are labeled as sports drinks, Shepard. Our routine is I usually carry a flask of coffee, hot coffee, carries about 4 cups of coffee in that, and Scout normally brings his cooler box with ice and some cool drinks, some water and some cool drinks in there. So during the day, if you feel for a fizzy drink, you just dip in and get a have a Coke or a Diet Coke or something, or if you just want to quench your thirst, there's lovely bottles of ice water there. And then usually by the end of the day, Shepard, especially if the wind comes up, your body gets pretty chilled, and it's so amazing to have a hot cup of coffee while you're out at sea, because you don't have any facilities around you to warm things up, etc. So if you take out a sandwich, just around lunchtime, have a sandwich and a nice hot cup of coffee, it really sets the mood. And you know what? There's a lot of... excuse me, I've got a frog. There is hardships being at sea and challenges. So these little comforts, you know, go a really long way at the end of a long day's fishing, Shepard.
Yeah, Adam, you know, as you say, yeah, the frog. Lucky it's not a Toby fish that got in your throat. Hey, the puff. You know how it puffs up. But alhamdulillah, you know, maybe you're missing a nice hot... cup of coffee this morning, but maybe you can indulge that. And also, you know, our seas have been making the headlines for the wrong reasons. You know, the huge waves that came in, the spring tides, and many things were washed away, and some even restaurants that were near the ocean, they got flooded. The launch site, how are they? Are they in good condition, Adam?
Yes, Shepard. Our launch site is a very dynamic environment. You often have standing up where it becomes really shallow and actually difficult to launch. And then sometimes after a few storms, it scours out all that sand and we get a deeper basin there. Then it's easier to drop your boat behind flat rock and warm your engines up in a safe area and then head out to sea. So, and also, you know, I mentioned the sandbanks earlier as well. That's a major factor that, you know, creates a huge shore break if there are sandbanks. So you really not need to know that launch site. It's not a spot for beginners. And like any launch site, if you're not familiar with it, get local knowledge, speak to the local skippers and understand, you know, what the challenges are so that you can launch and beach safely.
Now, Adam, you know, you talk about game fish and people invest a lot of money and the tackles they put in and the, you know, types of bait they're using. And suddenly, you know, tell us how much it cost to land a decent game fish, you know, with your rod, your reel, with your line and the type of tackle you're using and the type of bait you use and the hours you put in, the expenses of traveling to the spot. Can you do accountability presentation for us, Adam?
Yes, Shepard. As you know, with many different sports, there's different levels you can take it to. If your pockets are full, you can throw a lot of money at it. Or if you are just making ends meet, you can still indulge in the sport, on a budget basis. So it just depends, you know. So usually people start off with the budget, then they upgrade to fishing medium tackle. And then if you feel really passionate and really enjoying the sport, I mean, what is life, you know? your money is only valuable to you when it's spent, you know, to buy things for your enjoyment and fulfillment. So over the years in any angler's career, you end up fishing with top rate tackle and spending to your heart's content on your tackle. For example, to get into fishing in my shop, I'm not talking about game fishing, just general 6-foot rod with a combo. We've got them as little as 249 Rand, and that will get you fishing chafard. Or you could get into the big game fishing and spend up to 8,000 Rand on a rod and 20,000 Rand on a reel. But having said that, we've got game fishing combos, the rod and reel, for just 1,000 Rand. And even we throw in a free lure with that. We've got the Kona lures, which is ideal for Dorado fishing. Then when you go out to sea, Shafat, for example, you can take a lot of prepared baits, a lot of bait that you buy from a tackle store, like fresh bonitos, etc. And that would set you back like 50 Rand or 60 Rand each. You take it out to sea and you trawl them. You set them up on circle hooks and trawl them for big game fish. That's one option. Or you could just spend 20 Rand and buy a Yuzuri, which is a multi-hook trace that's used to catch live baits. So you spend a few minutes out at the usual live bait spots and catch fish like sugar mackerel and mast bunkers. Keep them alive in your live well. And then motor out to a spot like near the ships, where the ships act as a natural fish attracting device. And you pin these live baits out and slow drift along the ships and you can catch game fish. So going from spending hundreds of rands on a trip for bait to doing the similar kind of trip, catching the similar kind of fish with getting free bait, live bait from the ocean, Japan. So it just depends on your personal choices. The sport can be enjoyed on a really tight budget. And it can also absorb any amount of money you want to throw at each other. But having said that, I think the biggest expense these days would be the cost of the boat and maintenance and the fuel costs. Because for game fishing, you have to travel quite long distances to get to different fishing grounds. And then you have the corollary to the theory of using fuel, where you have all these kayak anglers who are not spending a single cent on fuel on their vessel, paddle out and sometimes catch bigger fish than the boat anglers have had.
Yeah, forget the horsepower. That's human power. The kayak anglers, they're going on their kayak and they're catching, really catching the fish, but staying healthy, wealthy, and wise. Sometimes, you know, we talk about, hey, the traffic is so heavy on the N2 and there's chock or block and you're going down the bluff and so forth. But talk to me about fishing traffic. What do they mean by fishing traffic, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, vessels moving at sea is regarded as traffic. We have certain rules of the road, forgive the pun. It's not really a road, it's an open sea, but we have rules to follow. So, and it's international convention. So whether you are in American waters or British waters, you don't have left-hand drive and right-hand drive or left-hand side and right-hand side, Shafat. It's a common universal law for all mariners. But talking about traffic, you know, you often experience an abundance of cars on certain roads when you're heading to work and get quite annoyed with the traffic. And you would assume that the ocean is so vast that everyone goes in their own direction and everyone's fishing on their own spot. But I'll give you a typical example of a traffic jam at sea, Shafat. So every morning in summer, our anglers head out to a spot called the containers. And folklore has it that a few containers had fallen off a ship and has formed an artificial reef on the spot. So it's really popular for catching live bait. And you'd often find about 15 to 20 boats all drifting over this one spot, trying to catch the live bait quickly. And then one by one, they all head out to sea shepherd. So we do experience traffic jams at sea as well.
Well, yes, as you said, we do have a traffic jam there. And alhamdulillah, then you get all these yachts together. You know, I've noticed this in yesteryear. I don't see that traffic anymore. But do they move like, you know, how a school of fish move? You find all the yachts moving together, or they used to go from Durban to Cape Town. Do we still have these people that, you know, get this type of thrill and excitement by moving in a group and moving around to different spots, Adam?
Yes, Shepard, there's always safety in numbers. So you usually find a fleet of yachts sailing, for example, from Durban to PE or Durban to Richards Bay as an organized event, either as a race or just as a social cruise, you know, from one port to the next port. And even if you're planning on sailing around the world, Shepard, there are groups that would get together, and it's called a rally. So you'd see where the... you plan the route according to, for example, you'd avoid hurricane season in America, and you know you really have to be well educated and knowledge in geography and all the weather patterns, etc. And there are lots of handbooks to assist you for people who've done these round the world trips to know when's the right cruising season, and so you'd either take your yacht and start from a certain starting point, or as they come to Durban, then you would, hop onto this journey from Durban and continue on with the group. And as I said, the safety numbers, you're all heading towards similar destinations, keeping in touch, keeping an eye on each other. If anyone has any equipment failure on these yachts, they can easily, you know, sail towards each other and render assistance. And even off Durban as well, Shepard, often on a Sunday morning, the weather conditions arrive, you'd see 8 to 10 yachts sailing. They usually set up a route with marker boys, and sail around these boys, often as social sailing or even as races organized by the sailing clubs in Durban, Shepard.
I tell you, Adam, you've got a knack of making everyone feel cozy at the posy. And mashallah, you're made for radio. You're a storyteller, you're cool, calm, collected. And you're a wonderful hearted human being that I embrace and celebrate for the pleasure of Allah. Before I let you go, hey, Gigi Foy shouting there in Baira. Recipe, Adam's recipe. What you got? What's your recipe this morning, Adam?
Yes, Shafari, I didn't have too much time to prepare a detailed recipe, but I'll just share with you. On Friday, we had a really heavy chicken biryani lunch. So in the evening, we were not really in the mood for a full meal. So I'll just share with you what we prepared. I made mince curry sandwiches. So we had leftover mince curry. So what I did is I took a frying pan, added about a half a tablespoon of ghee, cracked an egg in there, and kept whisking it as it fried up, as if I was making like a stir fry, like a egg fried rice, you know, like how the Chinese do it, like an Asian dish. So mixed up the egg. Fried that, added the mince curry into that, so it warmed it up nicely. Added some pepper and some herbs, drizzled in some balsamic vinegar to give it a bit of a tang, and then I sliced up some pickled onion, Shepard, and just threw that in at the end and switched the heat off, and then used a lovely thick slice of spread of butter on the bread, put them on the tawa. Spooned the mince filling over and covered it, and gave it a nice golden brown toast, Shepard. Served it hot, crispy toast with a tangy mince curry in the center, Shepard.
I tell you, that's already teasing the taste bud this morning, Adam. Your parting words before we let you go?
Yes, I didn't mention I went to a wedding last night. My niece Alia got married to Tahir in Westfold. Just love to dedicate the show to the both of them, starting on the journey of life. Allah give them lots of happiness and barakah in their life, and wishing them well for the honeymoon. And they are from Cape Town, so safe travels back, and enjoy the rest of your life. Thanks for a lovely show, Shafat. Salams to you and the
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.